Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And, of course, the host and founder of this program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol Marks practices what she preaches. She calls for an active and meaningful life for people, no matter how old you may be. And certainly, on today's program, we're going to explore one of her adventures that is nothing short of inspirational, as Carol loves to travel the world, find out what's happening with seasoned citizens in different societies, and report her findings to our listeners all across America on this radio show. In this conversation, she's going to tell us about what life is like in Singapore and her cruise on the Ottoman Sea. So, Carol, you went to a place that, frankly, I had not really heard of, called the Andaman Sea. Now, I know a lot of the places that are on that sea, but you went to the Andaman Sea on a big ship and went to a lot of incredible places. Tell us a little bit, as we begin this discussion, what and where is this body of water?
Well, this body of water is off of Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Singapore, and some other countries. And what makes it so interesting, why I wanted to go, for the first time you can take really cruise ship and visit these countries and not have to go through, say, all the airports in those places, and you know what a hassle that can be. Mm-hmm. So it makes it so much easier and more convenient.
No question. You know, it's interesting. You say Malaysia, you say Singapore. When most people, and I have to speak for myself, and I can't, of course, generalize everybody, because there are many people far smarter and worldly than I am. But I'm your average guy. Most people, they think of the Far East as China, Japan, Vietnam, Hong Kong, Tokyo. When you start getting into Thailand, formerly known as Siam, and you get into Singapore and Malaysia, would you find that most people are not that familiar geographically where these places are or anything about them?
They just don't know where they are, and we certainly don't hear about them. Only when something terrible happens do we hear about it in this country, and they're very important countries, and so that aroused my curiosity, and I went. And the Andaman Sea just goes on to so many other things, which I also want to mention, that it goes on to form the Eastern Indian Ocean, the South China Sea. So it connects many, many places.
I understand geophysically that there's something strange about what runs under the Andaman Sea.
Well, I thought it was fascinating, a little terrifying, because under it you've got two tectonic plates, and of course that causes a lot of earthquakes, and their average earthquake, would you believe it, is 8.4.
Oh my.
That's pretty high.
It's huge.
And that, in turn, you have the earthquake. If you have it under the water, it causes the seafloor to rise, as it did in 2004, and it produced that massive tsunami, 30 feet high. And so that fault runs under all these countries. That's why you hear about the earthquakes and the occasional tsunami.
Now, there was a, that's right, isn't there a volcano in northern Sumatra that is active? Isn't that near Indonesia? Again, forgive my ignorance, but you were there.
No,
I wasn't.
But you were so right. And it is in Indonesia. It's a part of Indonesia that they call northern Sumatra. It was erupting when we were there,
oh
so, you know, I always like a little excitement.
Whoa.
But and how I could, you know, actually see what it was doing was not by going up to the mountain, but by looking at all the cars that were coming into the place that we were visiting, because they were all covered with ash, gray ash, lots of it, streets covered with ash, and people were wearing masks.
When I was a kid growing up, volcanoes were always presented as these interesting but benign things. There's a mountain, and the little smoke comes out, and the lava comes out. And I remember in the movie 2 Million Years B.C. with Raquel Welch, you know, maybe the lava would come out and swallow up a couple of
cavemen, and that would be the end of it. And it wasn't until later, as I, you know, studied science and learned things, that volcanoes are among the most destructive forces that the Earth can inflict upon us.
That is so true. Mm-hmm. And as the world gets smaller because we're communicating with each other, people are looking things up, and we are learning so much more and from so many different sources, so it is exciting.
I remember back, I think in the 90s, one of the big stories we covered on talk radio was a kid named Michael, can't remember his last name. He had gone to Singapore and did something that in this country would be considered a misdemeanor, and they caned him. That's flogging, where they actually, and that was a worldwide sensational controversy. And basically what came out of that was that Singapore is run with a tight fist. In other words, they an iron hand. They don't put up with criminal behavior. But beyond that, and again, I'm trying to present this conversation from the view of every man. Most people find Singapore to be mysterious. Like, what is Singapore? Is it a city? Is it a country?
Is it
a friend of ours? Is it an enemy? What is? Tell us about Singapore, just the basics. Like, what is it?
It's just amazing. It's the squeaky clean economic heavyweight of Southeast Asia.
Wow.
You know, one of the amazing things I saw about this country was the fact that I could see from my hotel window there were at least 150 cargo ships out there every day waiting to come into Singapore. It is the most powerful, I think, port and city in the world, because it's, so many people are in there, so many businesses, they're making mergers, they're doing business. So it's a small country, and it was at one time in a bigger federation with Malaysia and Indonesia and Thailand, but it pulled out, it felt it was strong enough to be on its own. It's amazing. And guess what? One of the things that I found incredible was that, and I do call it kind of a dictatorship, maybe a benevolent one, they say no to chewing gum on the street.
Can't chew gum on the street, huh?
How do you find that out?
Maybe,
I don't know.
I wouldn't do it. You don't want to get caned. You know, 20 lashes for chewing gum, 25 lashes for chewing bubble gum. Do people smoke on the streets there? Is that funny? Like, smoking probably is everywhere, but chewing gum is illegal.
There are some people smoking, but of course you can only smoke in certain places like here, but they enforce it a little bit more than we do.
Did you hate the feeling when you were there that you were safe or in danger? And I don't know whether safe from criminals or in danger from the police. How did you feel in terms of your safety?
I felt very safe,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I knew that if they were so particular about little things,
mm-hmm.
that they were even more interested in security for everybody that was there visiting or people who live there.
Speaking of security, let's turn to the business at hand, and that is we are dealing with an upper demographic constituency with this program, and one of the things that you do is you travel the world to find comparative scenarios to see how seniors are treated and how they live in other countries, and then we compare it to here. Maybe we learn a few things, or we count our blessings, depending upon each case. And Singapore obviously has to have older citizens. What is their life like when it comes to health, transportation, and other services that they might need?
They are rated one of the best in the world, Singapore, and they're very good when it comes to health and transportation, things that older citizens might need. And they recently announced that they're going to have more public housing grants for lower income households and a national health insurance plan that now covers 92% of citizens is going to be expanded. So I would have to say that they do very well by their senior citizens.
That's good to hear. Now, I recently saw a documentary, a travelogue, as they used to call them. I don't think they call them travelogues anymore, but we know what I'm talking about. And it seemed to me that Singapore has some beautiful parks and good bridges and roads, and that it's a well-designed, well-structured country. Is that true? And if so, how do they pay for all that?
Well, you know, behind every wonderful thing, there's something that's not so wonderful that a lot of people feel and resent, and that is the fact that the parks, and there's a park every street, and they're beautiful. It costs so much to buy a place in Singapore.
Mm.
You can get a 1,000-square-foot apartment on the outskirts you can buy that. What you really do is you're leasing it from the government for $395,000 American dollars. And a nice apartment in town for just a couple could be $2.5 million. Now, the government gives you a loan for 30 years at 2%, but here's the kicker, Michael. You can only own or lease the apartment for 99 years. And if your heirs want to have it, they have to buy it all over again. And if it's not bought by the heirs at the market price at the time, well, the government takes it. And they also take all the assets, all the things you have had in your apartment.
Talk about death tax.
That's the ultimate.
That's the ultimate death tax. Not even. That's amazing.
I mean, I was so floored because that, again, is one of the things that I ask about housing because that's so important for all of us. And as we get older, it's harder to live sometimes, you know, in housing. We need particular kinds of housing. But one thing I will say, you really don't have to downsize in Singapore because the majority of apartments that people have are tiny.
Like Manhattan, very similar to or certain parts of Boston where it's very expensive and people want to be there and they get a little studio apartment or a one-bedroom apartment and it costs as much as a mansion would in the countryside.
Absolutely. And you know what really floored me was buying a car.
Oh.
I mean, that's where they get the money for these beautiful roads, I think, because how would you feel about buying a Prius and that the normal price for it in Singapore is $154,000?
You're kidding me.
No,
a Prius, which is basically an economy hybrid.
So the reason for the high price, because, you know, God, I had to find that out, was the high taxes. It's taxed at least at 100% of its open market price, and then you have to pay, this is the worst, a certification of entitlement for the car you're buying, and that could, say, cost you just for a Toyota Corolla close to $96,000. So it all winds up being only 15% of people who live in Singapore have a car.
Well basically, the feeling I get from what you're saying to me is that Singapore is a country for the rich. That do they have poor people there? Because I would think poor people would flee. The tyranny of being in a place it's like living in Beverly Hills. You can't live there unless you're rich.
The people that they have in Singapore that don't have money are all the workers that they bring in from other countries, and recently there has been some unrest about these workers, which are a necessity for this country, because they live, you know, in kind of warehouse conditions.
So they shove the working people and the poor people under the carpet. They're in the shadows.
They're in the shadows, but it doesn't look so bad when you see a block, you know? You don't know what's inside the block, what kind of housing, all those things, what the conditions are.
Well, I would imagine to a certain degree. I know that you're a woman who cares about economic justice and cares about freedom and human dignity. There's something disturbing about that, isn't there?
I do. I think it is. And as I say, quite surprised to see, you know, almost you would call it unrest emerging in such a strictly run, you almost could call it dictatorship. So that was very surprising to see it.
Well, I'm not that surprised, actually. That's what happens when there's a gap between the classes, and especially when it's enforced by a dictatorship. Eventually, you can't hold unrest and perhaps even a revolution down. Now, another place that I find fascinating, and it's because occasionally I go to a Malaysian restaurant, which sort of is like, well, first of all, it's everything that you shouldn't be eating if you're watching your weight.
But it's all good.
Malaysian food is sort of like Indian food on steroids. I mean, all of the great things about Indian food that I like and all the great things about Asian food I like, mix them all together and you've got Malaysian food. And that's about as much as I know about Malaysia. Now, you visited Malaysia, which I believe, based on this map that I'm trying to follow, is north of Singapore.
Got it.
Don't know much about. Don't know much about. It's not like a Sam Cooke song. Don't know much about geography. Tell us a little bit about the basics of Malaysia. I think that's where Kuala Lumpur is, but I don't know.
You are right.
I am.
It's the capital.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Thank you. You get 10 gold stars. And I, you know, the first place I never knew that there was this terrific rivalry between Malaysia and Singapore. Remember that they once were all hooked up in a confederation, and then Singapore left. Now, Malaysia has a population of 229 million, and Singapore only has a population of about 5 million. But they're some economic powerhouse, in fact, in the world. And Malaysia's always trying to catch up with its neighbor. So they built this 88-floor shimmering steel Petronas Twin Tower, which is the seventh highest structure in the world today. And they did it. I love the reason, because it's a terrible reason, but it's humorous to me. Anyway, they built it because they believe, the government, like that farmer in the movie with the ball field, that if you build it, they will come.
Uh-huh.
So they sure built it, and they thought, well, a lot of foreign businesses are going to come. It's such a beautiful, unusual tower.
Oh.
Well, it didn't work.
Oh, no, you know.
The towers are occupied by mainly two businesses.
Oh, my.
The country's national oil company and Al Jazeera, the Asian, you know, news company, broadcasting center.
Yeah. I'll tell you something.
So what does that say?
I'll tell you something. It's very interesting. Build it, they will come is a fascinating concept.
And
for the for the most part, it works, except it you don't build a skyscraper and a giant building where there's no reason for people to be. First, it has to be the reason for people to be there. Then the building comes. They did it backwards. I'm not the world's leading expert on these kinds of things, but it makes sense that why would a company want to go someplace just because it's a nice building? You would want to go to the place because it's a place you want to do business, and then you'd want to be in the most prestigious building there. The development of a business or a cultural center has to happen organically. You can't just say, okay, let's build a building and now this is going to be a center. You wind up with a lot of empty offices. That aside, I saw a picture of you in Talkers Magazine standing in front of the Petronas Towers. I've seen the Petronas Towers in a couple of movies, action movies, where people are falling from the windows and climbing on that very scary skywalk between the two of them that I don't know if I'd ever go on that. It looks like an Erector set. But what is the... And it was for a while the tallest buildings in the world.
Right.
So what was it like just looking at them, and did you go in them?
It was awe-inspiring, and I went up to the top.
Wow.
Because you get a magnificent view.
Yeah,
I bet. But you're so right about having a wonderful building and not having people occupy it, because you have to have in the city good education. If you have younger children, you've got to have a lot of attractions and amusements. You've got to do all that work before you can have the businesses.
Absolutely. How about healthcare now? Let's talk about healthcare in general in Malaysia, and of course, particularly as it applies to the elderly.
Well, healthcare is the responsibility of the Ministry of Health, and they've got an efficient, widespread system, two-tier, you know, the government and then the coexisting private system, and the government's trying to refurbish existing hospitals and build them better and make them have better equipment. When it comes to elder care, there is some troubling news in this country. Just like in this country, we have a shortage of geriatricians, especially trained, you know, doctors, to take care of the elderly. Well, in Malaysia, and you could see how many people they have, because I, you know, had told you, they only have, in the whole country, 9 geriatricians. That's
9? In the whole country?
In the whole country.
Try getting an appointment.
That's right. And, of course, in all these countries, I found it was very difficult to get appointments with primary care physicians because they were all in private practice and they weren't really involved with the government system.
Oh boy.
So that was a little difficult. And of course, in most countries, it's harder to get health care in the rural areas. That can be true in our country also. And another thing that's lacking in Malaysian hospitals is rehab treatment. It's kind of a foreign, new concept still to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone has a severe illness, it's still provided by the family for that family member as a rule. So that was quite something to learn about.
Well, I'll make it a point not to retire in Malaysia, that's for sure. Are you aware that there's a fascinating cave in Malaysia? I don't know whether or not you're aware that somewhere there is a very historic cave.
Oh, you know what? I said I have to see this cave.
Oh, you know about it?
Yes, and it is one of the most beautiful caves that I've ever seen because there's light coming in from the top because a lot of it is open.
Mm-hmm.
And the cave is made out of white marble and limestone. It has water running through it. And the most beautiful stalactites and whatever you know, those structures that hang down from it.
Now, stalagmites and stalactites. And I'll never remember which is which.
Which.
One comes down and one goes up.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have to know. Now, it turns out, this is what I found, you know, really remarkable, that the communist guerrillas used the cave as a hideout in the insurgency, which lasted from 1948 to 1960. That's how big the cave is.
Wow.
And when they would come out and raid periodically, they did a tremendous amount of damage, and they couldn't find them. Well, they finally found out about this cave. And they simply sealed it up, and that was the end.
They sealed it up? It was no longer a strategic military installation.
Yes, so it was effective. Was it nice? But war is not nice. Then, if you go in there today, you can view their battle plans, which were actually drawn on the walls.
Wow.
So it was quite interesting and really, really beautiful.
Was it exhausting for you to go into the cave? Were there high staircases?
And I didn't get all the way up to the top.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I did get up enough to largely see it and to get a whole feeling for it. And also during the Japanese invasion in Malaysia, people went and hid in this cave.
You're listening to A Conversation with Carol Marx, the host of our program, and we're discussing her recent cruise on the Ottoman Sea, in which she visited some very interesting places and reports on not only the interesting aspects of these places, but how they take care of their senior population. You're listening to A Touch of Gray. I'm Michael Harrison, and we will continue with Carol Marx's adventure on the other side of the planet in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And this is kind of a special installment of A Touch of Gray in which we're talking with Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, exclusively for the entire hour of the program. And we're talking about her recent trip to the Andaman Sea and her visit to such interesting places as Singapore and Malaysia. Now, in this part of the conversation, I spoke to Carol about her visit to North Sumatra and Indonesia, and we discussed what their healthcare system is like and how they care for the elderly. Let's continue now our discussion with Carol Marks. Now, where is North Sumatra? Is North Sumatra a country, or is it part of Malaysia?
And it's part of Malaysia.
Oh,
it's so big with all these people. It's composed of all these islands.
Uh-huh.
And so you're traveling around and visiting different islands. And so each particular island often has its own capital. And this was true in North Sumatra because there was a capital there called Medin.
Mm-hmm.
And boy,
mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I tell you, I want to go back to a place. Well, mm-hmm. It would have to be a little different.
Okay. In other words, it was not a pleasant place. Why not?
Well, it wasn't a pleasant place because you know how you go on the bus and you're always waiting for somebody, the traveler on the bus, who takes his time or her time to shopping or doing something, and you're sitting there waiting, waiting, waiting. Well, this time we had to sit in the bus and wait lots of times because our bus driver had the bus stop, got out of the bus, and we waited and waited. And he did not have any concern for the people that were behind him. You know, you're supposed to look, if you're a tour director, because I've been one, behind and see, you know, how everybody's doing, right? Who's on the end? Mm-hmm. And you are supposed to help stop traffic in many cities around the world, as this city was. It didn't have a traffic light. But no, our driver just went across the street. So
you mean just, he just left you sitting in the bus? Is that what you're saying?
No. He left us following him on the road.
Oh.
When he took us places, he just went ahead.
Oh.
He never looked back.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You would follow him, and it's like when you're in a car following another car, and the person doesn't have any thoughtfulness about what you're going through to keep up.
Yeah, that's so true. And then he took us, you know, when you go to a foreign country, you're supposed to see historic buildings, okay?
Yeah.
Well, he took us to a church, which I found out later, looking it up, was built in 2004. So a little baby church.
Oh, my.
But historic. It gets even better. Yeah. Because, as I've said in other talks, sometimes you go into churches and they really reflect the different cultures and religions in the area. There's a big blend. Well, I never saw such a blend as there was in this Catholic church. When you go in, there's a Hindu goddess, okay, right on the first floor. Next to her is a 3-foot picture of John Paul. So they're not right up to date on their popes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A little behind there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
On the second floor, there was a picture of Jesus, and he was surrounded by lots of colored flashing lights.
This sounds to me like impressionism. Like it's some kind of, certainly not an authorized arm of any traditional, you know, religious organization. Maybe it's just a little hodgepodge of stuff for tourists.
No, there were a lot of people in there also, you know, attending services on one of the floors.
Okay, so it's just something you learn. There's different
and,
blends.
And cultures
wow.
blend. And, you know, who is to say, you know, or really comment about it? Because obviously it works. And here's something. As you go out of the church and as you go out of a lot of buildings and museums, there's always a shop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had a little shop, and in the shop you could buy a statue of either Buddha or the Virgin Mary. So they were, you know, unique.
They got their icons, you know, they got an icon for all tastes. And that was, of course, a souvenir shop, right?
Right. This is what the last stop that the guide had on the tour. And guess what? Nobody tipped him.
Well, he deserved it, you know.
That's right.
Surprised he keeps his job. I'm surprised more people don't complain about him.
Oh, everybody again, did. Maybe it was his first time. Who knows?
Maybe they don't care.
You know, obviously.
Were there tensions in any of these countries? Any problems? You know, we're making it sound like it's kind of make-believe, but the world's a dangerous place. Do you find any tensions going on?
There are some, and I was really surprised at the tensions in Thailand.
Oh.
We've been reading about it in the paper, but it's kind of surprising because the tourist season is just starting over there because it's in the winter, and the tensions are between Thailand's urban royalists. They're loyal to the prime minister, who's the sister of the former prime minister, who was ousted by the military for corruption. And on the other hand, the poor rice farmers are supporting the prime minister because they've always, in the spirit of corruption, given them an awful lot of money in the form of huge subsidies for their crops.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is the one thing that I found in every country that I visited, and it exists in our country to some extent, you know, but over there, I mean, the corruption was absolutely unbelievable.
That's unfortunate. And
very.
As they say, don't get me started. I sometimes feel that we in this country are finding our culture is becoming increasingly corrupt. Or maybe I'm just getting smarter. I don't know. I'm not sure which.
Well, we're more aware of it.
Yeah,
And they are actually having riots in Thailand about this.
Oh, my. How about the elderly in Thailand? How is their lot in life?
Well, under their health scheme, they cover 99.5% of the population, and they have achieved universal coverage with rising costs. And so I think that the elderly are doing pretty well. The Thai government has put into place a directive by the Medical Service for the Elderly that stipulates, and I do like this, that every hospital shall have an elderly person's clinic to serve as a special express service channel for the elderly. In other words, they make it a lot easier to get into the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then every hospital there has special staff, and their job is to assist the elderly while they are awaiting service. And I think those are two good things. And, you know, if you learn one thing that's good and you can get it applied to other hospitals, say in our country, hey, what a good thing that would be.
Well, following your trip here on the Carol map, I see you also were in Indonesia. How's their health system and how are their elderly doing?
Not very good.
Oh, boy.
The number of physicians' hospital beds is really very low in Indonesia by world standards. In addition, healthcare facilities are generally below our standards. And in a medical emergency, it's often necessary to evacuate to other countries. People often go to Singapore or Australia. And unfortunately, though, because these conditions exist, along with them is the fact that Indonesia has the fifth largest elderly population in the world.
Oh, my. Wow.
So it's quite interesting. And, you know, I had to shake my head.
Did you take in the sights? You did all this academic stuff and all this history and all this research. How about just scenery and touring? Any interesting things to look at?
Yes, I went to the most beautiful place, I think, one of them anyway, in the world, Hang Nagah Bay. And it wins hands down because there are islands there that are made up of huge amber lime stone rocks and underground streams and caverns that you can go through in a canoe.
Wow.
And this is the island where the man with the golden arm was filmed in 1974 with Roger
Moore.
And you have to see them against the vivid blue sea. And they are huge, huge. They seem almost as big as the Petronas Twin Towers.
Wow.
These rocks. And I hiked up the island, and I did enjoy that. I enjoyed the fact that I got up there alive and came down.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
And we had a thrilling ride out to these remarkable islands because they were about an hour away. So we had a boat, and it had three 200-horsepower engines. It went 50 miles an hour. So can you imagine?
That's very fast on water. That 50 miles an hour on water is like going 125 miles an hour on land.
I had never had that experience.
That had to be thrilling.
Yes, and the ride was so bumpy.
Well, yeah, because the water becomes very hard when you're hitting it at that speed. And, you know, God forbid you wind up getting thrown overboard.
Right.
It'd be like hitting concrete.
I believe it. And I got completely soaked and wet. But it's so hot there in all these countries that you dry off very quickly. And I didn't see any heavy people in these countries. And one of the guides told me that you perspire so much because it's always 90, even in the winter, and the humidity is 80%, that you just sweat off everything. So you can
lovely.
Eat what you want.
Lovely. Bunch of sweaty, skinny people who don't chew gum on the streets. Let me ask you, we're running out of time, but I saw one of your pictures, and I've been just getting into some of them. What was that big Buddha that I saw you near? There was a giant Buddha, but I'm not quite familiar with what it was.
Lie down,
yeah.
I believe. And that was a unique temple, and it had, the Buddha was one of the largest lying down Buddhas in the world.
A reclining Buddha. Okay.
In gold leaf. But what really got me fascinated was that when the guy told me, I couldn't believe it, and I believed her because she was a professor, that they had a couple of monks that had really been responsible for building this temple. Well, they embalmed them, but they embalmed them sitting up on the floor of a temple with their eyes open, covered in gold leaf. Now, you can't top that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Like, you go, oh,
now, that was, oh. Was that in Malaysia, this Buddha?
Yes.
Wow.
And then, after seeing the Buddha, right on seeing the monk that was covered in gold leaf, right next to him, there was like a fortune machine where you could find out what your future would be.
Mm-hmm.
You pick a number. I picked a number, and then you go in and pick a slip of paper behind the number. Well, everybody in my group got the most depressing horoscope they
really?
Ever got. Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes, and I thought that was something I'm always going to remember.
That's what you get for buying fortune cookies at a Buddha shrine.
It said, well, I'm going to have a terrible...
You will meet somebody short and pale and ugly.
So isn't that something? Because you would never, ever think of that. You know, usually they throw nice things in your horoscope.
You're going to be rich. You know, you're going to meet somebody who will open up your eyes to the better things in life. You know, well...
Quite remarkable.
What can I tell you? So, in conclusion... You know, they call it a takeaway. Have you got any better insights to these Asian countries you visited? Is there any one or two or three points that stick in your mind?
Well, I just thought that you get the feeling about other cultures that they're so different, and yet the people are always kind and caring and open, and they will ask anybody if they meet on the street for the first time, would you like to come to my home and have some food? So that's kind of what I learned about them. And I also learned the wonderful fact that in some parts of these different countries that I visited, particularly in Malaysia, all the religions get along. On one street, there's a mosque, there's a church, there's a Buddhist temple and a Hindu temple. They're all right next to each other. So why can't we get along like that?
Very good point indeed. Thank you so much, Carol Marks. We've been talking to Carol Marks about her recent trip to the Andaman Sea, and we certainly are glad that you've joined us for this here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. If you find this type of radio program interesting, or you'd like to know more about Carol's trips, Carol's resources for better living, and her philosophy, visit our website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. It's atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. You know, I think back to some of the conversations I've had with Carol over the years, and this program has been on the air more than 20 years. Can you imagine? Which is a testament to the great work this woman has done and to the fact that there is a need for radio programs for upper demographics at a time when most advertising agencies and most radio stations and networks try desperately to have young programming for younger people. Nothing wrong with that, believe me. And as I am a publisher of a trade publication, I'm part of that. But I do believe there is a need, and certainly Carol Marks is a champion of this, for programming for older folks too. And we're not talking about elderly. We're talking about people over 50 years old. And this show has certainly filled that need and continues to, and we're very grateful for your support. Again, visit that website, atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. Carol's been all over the world. She's been to Antarctica. She's been to the desert. She's been to the mountains. She's been on every continent. And, of course, she tackles all the topics from Main Street to, of course, Washington, D.C., and she's on top of everything. She's just an incredible woman. Coming up next, we're going to talk with our senior correspondent, attorney Steve Wiseman, and he's going to tell us about something called the Death Master File. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here. We'll be right back.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney, and he is an author and an expert on so many of the topics we talk about here. He is specifically attuned to the scams and the frauds that we have to face in our daily lives. He is the webmaster of the website scamaside.com. I suggest you visit it. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Here now, he will talk about the Deathmaster file. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, I know you, like me, like some of the science fiction movies and Star Wars. Well, there's something out of the Social Security Administration called the Deathmaster file. To me, it sounds like something that Darth Vader would have kept. But in fact, what it is a list that Social Security has put together whereby anyone can go online and get access to the Social Security numbers for someone who has died. An interesting kind of side thing on this, when I was writing my book, 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age, when people are asked to give their Social Security number by various companies that don't really need it, kind of running around on the Internet, you could find people saying, don't give them your Social Security number, give them Richard Nixon's. Well, the number that was floating around I decided to check it out. So I went to the Death Master File, looked up Richard Milhouse Nixon, and found out that, indeed, that was the number that was for real. But here's the problem. It helps life insurance companies, pension companies, and the idea was to help combat fraud so that if someone was claiming using a Social Security number for someone who had died, there would be this large clearinghouse where these various agencies and companies could go to check it. The problem was it's costing the really the American people about $786 million a year in fraud, because what's happening is scammers and identity thieves are accessing these numbers. They read the obituaries. They find out who's died. And then they just use that Social Security number and probably for at least a few months or more, creating problems with identity theft for the dead person and the estate. And all kinds of a mess has come from this. So what finally happened is the government is just about ready to limit access to this Death Master File. But until that happens, and remember, it's going to take them a while to get this legislation through. If you have a relative that passes away, yes, you can put the obituary in, but contact the three major credit reporting bureaus and close out the credit file right away. It's something that hardly any of us think to do, but trust me on this one, you'll be glad you did.
Thank you, Steve. Important information, and that's what we're about here at A Touch of Gray. Steve Wiseman has written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and I suggest you visit the website scamaside.com. Steve Wiseman is a regular feature of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, and thank you, Carol Marks, for sharing your trip to the Ottoman Sea. And thank you for listening. And on behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.